is episode 230, and I am joined by my co-host, a Silver Pro, who I am eternally grateful to be doing the show with this week, Michael Hinderacher.
But eternally grateful only for this week, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, next week I could hate you,
yeah,
I don't
okay.
know.
Don't know how I'll feel then, yeah. But fair.
Yeah, okay.
All right. I can live with that.
But you know who else we're eternally grateful for is our sponsors at Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood. If you don't want to support the podcast directly, you can go to patreon.com/CCMTG. Or if you're looking for maybe some sealed product or some stuff that Oasis doesn't have in stock, or some awesome magic content, you can check out Fusion Gaming, our other sponsor. You can check out the other podcasts on the network in Limited Time Only, another podcast hosted by me, and Common Knowledge, a popper podcast by Getting Better at Magic the Gathering, produced by me, by some awesome hosts in the form of Brandon and Lobert. Those guys are really picking up steam. They're getting comments every week on their YouTube videos. So they do it. They don't do the show live. They record it and then post it to the YouTube channel, and then we post the show to the network. So shout out to them. Shout out to Danny, who I got to do the show with this week on Limited Time Only. It's been super awesome. So, but yeah, if you want to support this show, you know, CCMTG on Patreon is the way to do it. There are other ways to support the show, though. I constantly get asked, like, hey, I can't be a patron. How do I do, like, a one-time donation, stuff like that? There's tons of ways to support the show. First of all, just sharing the show with your friends is a great way to do it. There's also just a PayPal donate button on the homepage. If you just go to constructivecriticism.com, you can hit the donate button at the bottom, and it will take you to a PayPal one-time donation page. You can also buy CCMTG swag. So, if you just buy a t-shirt or a hoodie or mugs or a sticker, it just kicks us a buck. So, you get some swag out of it. We get a dollar. Everything is appreciated. So, and you wearing your Constructive Criticism t-shirt to an event also supports us. So, those are tons of ways that, you know, you can support the show, and we really appreciate all of it. So with that being said, I want to talk really quickly about me. So I'm back, and I just want to thank the listeners. I was back last week, but I was still like, not supposed to be back, as Mason would say. And my life was super crazy. And I just really appreciate the listeners, like, and the patrons especially, being really understanding of my life changes that were going on in the last couple weeks. And then also, I want to give a special thanks to all the patrons who I've sent swag out to. You should have gotten wristbands and tokens. I've only had one return so far. I messaged that listener. It was one of our listeners in Australia. It's been sent back to me twice. I'm not sure why. I have international postage on it. It just says they just keep writing Australia on the thing. And I'm like, it's an international stamp. The thing doesn't weigh anything. I don't know. But yeah, so you should, if you haven't gotten them, you should be getting them in the mail. We really appreciate all of our patrons. And I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been so supportive. With that being said, let's get right into the show this week, Michael. Hashtag always improving is our first segment. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all the time to be improving ourselves. So, Michael, with that being said, what did you do to improve at Magic the Gathering this week?
I played so much Magic. I probably drafted like 8 or 10 times on Magic Online in the last 4 or 5 days. I won 3 of them in a row at one point, which was pretty sweet. Played a bunch of constructed leagues, and then played the Modern Challenge and finished okay. I think I missed top 8 and maybe top 16 on Breakers. It was big for the number of rounds it was, and then top 8ed the Legacy Challenge. So just played a lot of Magic. And I played the mocks as well on Sunday at the same time as the Legacy Challenge, so it was really a lot.
You top 8ed the Legacy Challenge while playing the mocks?
Yeah, well, eventually I dropped from the mocks. My deck was, like, kind of sweet. It had, I think, double Knight of Malice and double Knight of Grace and a Lyra, but I had, like, no removal spells, and my filler was pretty bad. And I was really bad at drawing Lyra, so it was kind of
sad.
Yeah,
I don't have... I don't have. So for me this week, I got to play a PPDQ. I've been playing some standard, filled out my standard collection a little bit on MTGO, and kind of. I've mostly, in the last couple weeks, most of my magic has just been on Arena, just because that's what I have time for. But I got my brew muscles going. And one of the things that I'm really excited about, and the thing is kind of that, you know, we always talk about, like, how dedicated you need to be to magic if you want to make magic, achieve certain things in magic. And, you know, finally, for what feels like the first time in a month and a half, I don't have anything major in life changes going on for me right now. So we have a team meeting for Team CC Worldwide tomorrow. I hope to figure out kind of where the team is at, what their goals are, and hopefully have another season like the first and only season of Team Constructor Criticism. We got a bunch of guys qualified for the Pro Tour. I mean, you got you and Danny Silver, you know, and I hope to have another one of those seasons, and hopefully I can be one of those players this time.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's kind of always the goal, isn't it? That's
yeah.
It's a tough one for sure.
Let's talk really quickly about Card of the Week. So every week on the show, we want to give out some magical cards to some of our patrons. If you're a patron of $3 or more, you can be entered to win Card of the Week. And this week, we want to give out a playset of Champion of the Parish. And the reason for this is just how dominating humans is being when people are trying to attack it right now, Michael.
It's just pretty good. It's like a really nice mix of kind of a tribal aggro deck and like hate bears. It's rough. I mean, the deck sideboard is terrible, and it's still putting up these results.
So where does Champion of the Parish kind of fit into the format? It's a 1-mana 1/1. How does it not just die to Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push just right off the bat?
Well, the secret is that it does die to Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push a lot of the time, but it's also often secretly good for you when it does, right? Like, one of the weird things with humans is that a lot of the time, your opponents just can't possibly play enough removal spells to, like, match one for one as you get later into the game, and, you know, you have, you know what, you're playing 19 lands and 4 Aether Vials and 37-ish creatures. Like, if they're Fatal Pushing your Champion of the Parish, it means they're much less likely to be able to Fatal Push your Thalia, your Meddling Mage, your Kite's Elf, and it just, all this stuff kind of snowballs. And then in addition, sometimes, you know, especially with double Champion of the Parish or Champion of the Parish, Thalia's Lieutenant or something like that, you can just take control of the board and essentially have kind of a Boggles-like opening going on.
Yeah, I mean, when they don't have that Fatal Push, it just usually means the game's over if you get those on turn one. So having them have it just means that, kind of like you said, that Thalia might tax them just enough to get you over the hump or things like that, so...
Yeah, it's a card that doesn't look like it would work that well, honestly, but it's incredibly powerful with Thalia's Lieutenant. It's just another one drop in a deck that's very, very hungry for one mana plays. Humans is probably the best deck in the format at maximizing the use of its mana every turn of every game.
Yeah, and even with that, Aether Vial does it even more somehow, because it, like, you get to maximize the mana that you already have in play, plus your Aether Vial, so it's like you're actually cheating on mana, which is really impressive.
Yeah, a lot of Aether Vial decks are trying to leave it on one spot for, like, a lot of turns, and then play kind of a slower game, playing those as very disruptive cards. Humans a lot of the time is trying to play Vial on one, and then hit, like, 1, 2, 3, 3, and basically just have the game be done by then.
Yeah, it's really impressive, right? Because it just means that you get to cheat every single turn.
Yes.
Up on the curve, even. Which really benefits Champion of the Parish, because it means that when you have an Aether Vial in play with a Champion of Parish, you know, you're double spelling a lot more often.
Yeah, I mean, Humans is just probably the best deck at double spelling. I think that's fundamentally, like, at its most basic level, that's why it's so powerful. It's basically doing what Burn has always been good at doing, right? Which is, like, how am I going to create card advantage? I'm going to create card advantage by making your cards either bad, uncastable, or killing you when they're still in your hand.
Yeah. These will be given out for this month's Card of the Week. Let's go on to our power rankings really quick. and talk about the. So I didn't want to do the work that MTG Goldfish already does, because we would have just combined MTGO results with the opens and the other stuff. Now, we're in an interesting spot in Magic, and the power rankings on this show need to adjust for it, in that SCGs have really moved towards Modern and team events, and that's like it. That's basically all they do now. And because of that, there's a lot of like most of the information you're going to get from the SCG circuits are going to sit in team events for most formats. And even in the weeks that are team events, that means that your Modern information is also coming from there.
Right.
So, with that being said, we got to figure this out. We'll come up with a solution that works. But let's just use MTGO Goldfish for right now. And at number 5, we have Boggles.
Yeah, I mean, Boggles is just, it's very straightforward, but it's in a reasonable place in the metagame. I think Leyline is still fairly good as a main deck card.
Yeah.
And Boggles is very, Modern's in a very linear place right now, and Boggles is good in that metagame.
Yeah, I think that linear is exactly the word that I would use to describe Modern right now. It's funny, because a lot of people are saying, like, Modern is in the best place it's ever been, and I think it's the least I've enjoyed the format in a long time. And the fact that Boggles does so well in this format is kind of speaks reasons as to why I don't like it. It's funny, because we're going to get into, like, some decks that I legitimately love playing, but I think that the format is in a place where the games are all lopsided, and Boggles does a really good job of playing lopsided games.
I agree. I think that Boggles' best draws beat a lot of other decks' best draws, and right now Modern is a lot about lining up your best draw against their best draw and just slamming them into
right.
each other.
You know, if you... I mean, even... Like, Boggles does a good job of just making dudes that can attack through a bunch of hollowed ones.
Yeah.
Right, and like,
I mean, Hollow
like,
One is not very good against Boggles. It just
right, and that's something that other decks don't get to say. They don't get to say I can just continue to be down against this deck.
Boggles also just tends to do well against random stuff, because it's so hard to interact with, and has like access to, I mean, main deck Leyline, but also sideboard Stony and Rest in Peace. Like, its matchup against a lot of the fringier decks is surprisingly good.
Yeah. Where are you at with this deck? Is this something that you would consider picking up tomorrow?
I don't really like it, because I don't like your humans matchup. I think that matchup's pretty rough, and that's a big... It's a big detriment. I don't know. It depends a lot. Like, if you had a local event, it's the kind of thing where if people are still trying to play fair decks in your metagame, I think Boggles is a pretty good choice, but I think the secret is that Humans is the most fair deck anyone should be playing.
Yeah, so the next deck is another fair deck that I personally really love, but I would not play this deck tomorrow. And that's Jund coming in at number 4. So here's the thing, Michael, is I think that Jund, if it, like, in the world... It's funny, did Bloodbraid put us here? Are we here because of Bloodbraid Elf? Because people said, I need a way to beat Bloodbraid Elf, and if I just go as linear as possible so that they can't gain their weird advantages against me, is that where we're at?
I don't know. I feel like Grixis Death Shadow falling out of favor over the last few months is interesting. I'm not sure if it's because Grixis Death Shadow has actually gotten worse, or people just aren't investing the same time in it, but Grixis Death Shadow for a period of time was a deck that felt easy to attack. Jund, I'm just not really sure what my good matchups were supposed to be.
Well, you don't have great matchups with Jund, that's the point. Like,
but like, a lot of the time I'm not sure what my 50-50 matchups are supposed to be. I mean,
I think that you're pretty okay against humans. I think that you're not good against Tron, you're not good against Boggles, you're very good against Affinity depending on how you build your deck, and then Hollowed One is you have to build your deck to beat it. Otherwise, you're going to get smashed.
Yeah, I just feel like you're being pulled in a lot of different directions. You know, if you could play a 50-card sideboard with Jun, I would be mostly happy to play it. But as stands, I am just not a big fan. I don't really think that... There are so many different linear decks. There are just so many different linear decks.
My question was, though, is Jund the reason that there are so many different linear decks? Because they're all trying to attack Jund on one specific access? Because the week that Jund came out, for 2 weeks, it was like, well, obviously, this is the thing to do again. It was very good against a lot of the things that people were doing with Death Shadow. And then people went kind of big mana for a minute, and then how do I beat big mana and Jund at the same time? And Boggles is a perfect example, and Hollowed One, too, is a perfect example of, like, okay, well, good luck.
Yeah, Jun never really put up very good results online. It put up some decent paper results for a minute, but I think that fundamentally, it's just too fair. Like, you look at a deck like Grixis Death Shadow, and while it's a quote-unquote fair deck, it's also, like, it has some kind of combo kills, it has some hands that don't really allow your opponent to play. I mean... You know, we've all been on the receiving end of, like, Thoughtseize, Death Shadow, Stubborn Denial, you know, like, where you just, every play you made basically got invalidated. And Jund is not very good at doing that. And I think that just its inability to ever, like, beat good, unfair openings from your opponent is a big detriment. And I think that, like, it's good at out-fairing the fair decks, so maybe it puts a lot of pressure on decks like Grixis Death Shadow, because if you're going to play against Jund, it's just tough because they're better on the fair axis and you're not really a good enough combo deck to beat them reliably.
Sure.
It's hard to say. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think that it's hard. Like, I played this at the last GP that I played in. I think it was the last GP that I played in. And I just wouldn't run it back. Like, not that it's not good. Like, I think a Jund deck top 8ed, and I think that we'll constantly see Jund decks top 8 in paper, because, like, the deck's just full of good cards, right? But I don't think that in a world in which... The world of Modern is not... Like, if the Jund deck existed in Standard, right, that would be a really great deck for a Standard tournament.
Sure.
But the problem is that Modern is so diverse in its... Like, it's funny because we say linear decks, right? So you would think that, like, that could mean that the decks all have similar game plans in being linear. The problem is that the linear decks have very different game plans from each other. And they're trying to attack you in a linear way, but in very different ways from each other. It's like, if between Boggle's Affinity and Humans, right? The only card, I was thinking about this today as I was thinking about Modern. I was like, man, the only card that I, like, really want to be playing right now is Engineered Explosives. Like, in a deck that wants to interact with these decks. Outside of that, I don't know. And Jund is certainly not one of the ones that's going to be playing Engineered Explosives.
Yeah, I think more than anything, Liliana the Veil is just not good right now.
Yeah.
Jund is a very good Liliana the Veil deck, but if that card isn't a card you want to be playing, I'm not sure why your first choice would be Blackburn X.
So, for me, the next deck is one that I am considering for GP Las Vegas, and that's Affinity, coming up next at number 3. I don't know, man. I don't know how this deck does it. Like, it just doesn't care about the rest of the world, and it's gonna do what it's gonna do. It's funny that Spire of Industry has somehow made this deck so much better.
It's interesting. I think it's the best Mox Opal deck, and Mox Opal is the most broken card in Modern by a substantial amount, and you get a lot of mileage out of just having the ability to win fair-ish games of Magic, but getting a lot of completely, you know, combo-style turn 3 kills.
Yeah. I have a question for you, because this is something that I'm debating going into this. You know, if we look at the sideboard that we have on screen, it's a pretty interesting... I mean, it's a classic Affinity sideboard, right? With, you know, tons of different directions on cards. one card that a lot of Affinity players like to bring in that I personally just can't bring myself to put in my 75 at this point is Blood Moon. What matchups do you board in Blood Moon against with Affinity that aren't either already good for you or you don't have other options for?
It's rough. I mean, I would probably board it in against... I would probably board it in against Tron, but I don't love it in that matchup.
Yeah, and Volokud, I certainly could board it in, but I don't love it there.
I would board it in against Boggles.
Okay. Tell me about that.
I think that Boggles is good at invalidating your fair game plan. And I think that you are trying to maximize your number of cheese draws against it.
Okay.
I have not found Boggles to be a great matchup for Affinity in general.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not a good matchup for you. That's an interesting reason to play it. But I would be surprised if Blood Moon was the
I don't
card
love it right now either.
Yeah. So
I'm more
that's
interested
a little bit
in,
interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm more interested in having ways... I guess, for better or worse, the cool and bad thing about Affinity is you literally can play...
Play whatever you want.
Most anything in the sideboard.
So, Michael, one of the reasons that I'm highly considering this deck is kind of for that reason, right? You know, in a world where you need to hit your spots, you need to get a little lucky, and things like that, I really like the option of just playing whatever sideboard cards I want.
Yeah, I mean, so there are a couple of caveats. Having played a fair amount of Affinity at this point, I like that you can sideboard a lot of different cards. The biggest problem with Affinity in general is that you are still basically playing game one with different, like, marginal flex slots in boarded games, and other decks are getting real cards against you. So while you get to improve your deck composition slightly, your Thought Seizes are a lot worse than their Stony Silences.
It's true.
All of your matchups get substantially worse after sideboarding, basically. So the sideboard is, you know, it's fine, and I'm curious to see if it ends up... You know, I've been playing Hazoret in the sideboard for a while. I've been pretty happy with it. I don't know if Karn is better or worse, but it's another option that, you know, probably test out, and...
It's what I'm currently... That's currently what I want to test.
There are a billion different options for Affinity, and it's a good deck. It's been a good deck basically forever.
Yeah. All right. So our number two deck is Mason's Boys, the Hollow Boys. You know, Holly Boys to the rescue. Holly Boys, Hollow Boys. I don't even know how he says it. Hollow Boys. He tells me. So this deck is terrible. If you play it, you know, you should be ashamed of yourself. No, the deck's fine. I tried some of this, and it's very, Burning Inquiry is a funny card because, while your deck is very much set up to say, I don't really care what my Burning Inquiry does, it doesn't always turn out that way.
No, it's true. I think this deck, the sequencing, and, like, you get really... It's hard to say you get punished, because you don't get punished in the same ways that other decks get punished, and it makes it feel very high variance, but I don't know that this deck is actually significantly higher variance than really anything else, but the variance is much more obvious.
Right.
So, yes. I think this deck is actually incredibly, incredibly difficult to play, and...
Yeah, I felt stupid playing it, so that's probably
your
true.
Your brain just kind of hurts. I mean, I know Mike Sigrist is on record saying it's the hardest deck he's ever played. And I think it's because you're frequently trying to play to outs that aren't in your hand, and you're trying to maximize percentages of keeping your outs.
You see so many cards.
Yeah.
You see so many cards, but also, you know, it's actually one of the reasons that I know some people... Can we talk about this for a second? Because some people, like, don't like Ancient Grudge for some reason, and they want to, like, play other cards in that slot and change... I think Owen actually did this, right? Didn't he cut Ancient Grudge for... Was it Stony Silence
or something? No. They were playing Ancient Grudge. I was talking about potentially playing Stony Silence if you're playing white. but
no, somebody did this. They 5-0'd.
That's possible. I mean, but the problem is you get into all these situations where you like have a Goblin Lore or a Burning Inquiry, and trying to do the math on different lines as you're playing is just incredibly difficult. It's one of those decks.
He did. You're right. He had the land. Okay.
It's one of those decks that makes you realize just how often there actually is a slightly better mathematical play, but sometimes it's hard to see it until
it's too late.
It's just an incredibly challenging deck to play, and I think that it kind of reminds me of Infect in some ways. Like, everyone can win the hands where you're like, you know, Noble Blighted Agent, you know, Vines a spell, untap, kill you. But the games where trying to delicately finesse everything that you possibly can, it's just tricky.
I actually found, and you've played this way more than I have, but I found a large percentage of my wins were coming from, like, post-sideboard having Lavamancer in play and using Lavamancer to hold off the game until I could execute my game plan. Is that common, or...?
It's a good Grim Lavamancer deck. I mean,
that's what it felt like. Yeah. That's what it felt like. It was like one of the best Grim Lavamancer decks I played, and it had me thinking like, why is this not in the main? Like, this is.
I mean, is I just played in. A game, but I just played a game too where I cast Burning Inquiry, double Hollow One on turn one, and my opponent discarded all the spells in their hand.
Yeah, that's a good way
to
do it too.
Like, the deck definitely has some really meme-y draws, and I think that, like, it's easy to get tilted playing it or playing against it, but if you actually spend your time thinking about the optimal play rather than the outcomes of plays, I think it's a pretty interesting deck.
Okay. I found that I was losing most of my game ones and then winning most of my games in sideboard.
You do get better after sideboarding, and the cards that people like against you are, like, you know,
bad.
Nothing actually. The secret is that you always have the, like, turn one, double hollow one, you're probably dead.
Well, and the thing is, Matt Kling and I were talking about this while he was really high on the deck, is that I can't actually afford to bring in spots against Hollowed One, because, one, there's a chance that I don't have them in my hand half the time, and two, like, if I, like, what, like, other than Obstinate Baloth, like, what do you actually...
The secret is that something like Obstinate Baloth isn't
it's
even
It's not
good.
Even that good!
Because a lot of their draws are going to be, like, Faithless Looting, Cycle, Street Wraith, Double Hollow One, and you're going to be sitting there with your Obstinate Baloth thinking, huh.
Right. So, this is exactly what we talked about. And then we talked about, like, Ancient Grudge. And it's like, do I want to bring that in? And it's like, no, that's stupid. Like, what if you don't even play a Hollowed One? Then I just have this stupid Ancient Grudge in my hand
or
in my graveyard.
Yeah, it's...
And it's like... Yeah, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
It's like... My options are stupid because this deck is stupid. I'm using quotations for those listening on the podcast. Not that it's actually a stupid deck. It's just, like, nothing that I would reasonably want to bring in multiple matchups, which is just how you maximize your modern sideboard cards, makes sense here.
Yeah, basically, Leyline or Grafdigger's Cage are pretty good if you have them anyways. And outside of that, there's nothing I would basically ever sideboard against this deck. I guess
maybe,
I've lost games to,
like,
Rest in Peace and Ruined Halo before, but I don't know that. I mean, I think, like, all the graveyard hate is fairly good, except Surgical.
So the number one deck that we have is Humans. This deck did really well this weekend, so it's not surprising that it came in at number one. We talked about this deck a little bit during the Card of the Week segment, but, Michael, this is a deck that you were really high on that you're not considering for GP Vegas?
I don't like the mirrors. I think that they're really high variance, and I think every match of Magic, the better player is more likely to win, just because mulliganing and sequencing are not easy, and those come into play a lot, but I do specifically believe that the Human's Mirror is higher variance than basically any other... Like, there are less obvious... There are less... difficult decisions with Humans, especially in the mirror match, than there are in most of these mirrors outside of maybe Boggles.
So, kind of looking at the list on the screen a little bit, this deck list actually exemplifies one of my thoughts that I don't quite understand about humans, and that's your one-ofs. I am so sorry, I just yawned.
What one-ofs, you know, is this one playing, specifically?
So this one's playing a one of Dark Confidant, one of Kessig, one of Direfleet, Daredevil. And it seems like from what I've seen, Dark Confidant has started to become pretty regular as a one of. And then people, like, is it that Reflector Mage is a flex slot? Like, what are the flex slots in this deck, Michael?
So basically the fourth Thalia is a flex slot. Sometimes the fourth Reflector Mage is a flex slot. It's really just that you are only at about 58, 59 cards. Like, after you add in all the four ofs. So
is the Dark Confidant an auto include for you?
I think the more important thing to consider is how you want to split the curve slots. I think playing four drops in the main deck is incorrect. I wouldn't play Pian Kira, and I wouldn't play Whirler Rogue. And then Malcontents is probably slightly better in the mirror than any of the other three drops. Like a Zathrid Necromancer I've seen people main sometimes. Dark Confidant is a funny card in that you would absolutely never want to see the second one. So there's generally one main and often none side. Daredevil.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. It's pretty common, right? Just that one.
Are just getting away from four Thalias, I think, mostly because one of the only ways Thalia is actually not kind of broken in this deck is when you draw the second one.
Does the three mana Thalia not make their creatures come into play tapped?
It does, but you're looking for things that impact the board more immediately. Oftentimes, they're playing from behind a little bit at that point. And the biggest thing with that Thalia, in my experience, is that if they're playing from behind, you would rather have something that has an immediate effect or can attack immediately at three. And if they're ahead, it really does nothing.
Okay.
So, I've seen people play that as a one-off before. I think that Malcontents specifically is probably good in the mirror, just because the board states get so gummed up.
Cool. So that's Modern. For what we'd play and why, I'd like to say, let's do both Standard and Modern for PPTQs and people, and because it was our format of the week. So, Michael, what would you play in Modern, and what would you play in Standard?
I would play Quirkland Ironworks in Modern.
Best deck by a lot.
I think it's very good. You were talking about wanting to play Engineered Explosives as your one card out of Jund. This is a combo deck that mains three of them.
No, I actually was saying that Jund, I don't think Jund can play it, which is one of the reasons I'm not interested in it.
Right, but you were talking about the card that appeals to you in multiple matchups, right?
Yeah. I think so. I think that EE is kind of at an all-time high right now.
Yeah. I also think that it's a little bit trickier to play against than people think, and I think that just the volume of matches that most players have against Kirkland Ironworks right now is very low compared to a lot of the other top decks, compared to playing against something like Affinity, where even if you're pretty good with Affinity, you're still going to sometimes play against players who have played like a lot more matches than you in that matchup.
Yeah. What about Standard?
Standard, honestly, I'm not that sure. I probably lean some snake variant at this point for this week.
So for me in Standard, there's a pretty good chance I'm just playing green black snake this weekend, or soul dice snake.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so sorry. I'm just having a yawning fit. For Modern, I'm on one of two decks for this GP, and I'm pretty solidly on them. It's either going to be Affinity or Nine Escape Shift. So it will be one of those two decks.
Yeah, I mean, I think Affinity's really... It's really good. I really like Affinity. I really like sequencing decks, and that deck ticks a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah, Affinity's currently where I'm at, but we'll see. It's not hard to convince me to play Scapeshift. So if somebody on my team does it, it'll probably happen. We're going to skip Deck of the Week this week for time considerations. We spent a lot of times on those decks. That was good. So, and we're going to go straight into our trading grounds. Michael, I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong.
You gotta do the Tomoharu Saito move.
What is that?
Okay, so I don't know how this is gonna sound. I'm gonna move my microphone away so I don't scar anyone. But before he's playing an important game, he'll do this and just slap himself real hard in the face after drumming on his legs. It is great. I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of playing him, but it is easily one of the greatest moves that anyone does at a Magic tournament.
All right. So this week we invited listeners. I think this is our second time doing this, so we just want to kind of do it every once in a while. Just let listeners ask whatever they want. So Matthew says... So I've been playing the same deck, Snake, for quite some time, since Kaladesh, and I'm feeling the need to change in the new meta. I'm heavily invested in this deck. I have limited means to invest in new cards and decks. What is a good way on my limited expenditures in terms of new card investment, and what tools do you recommend for playing new stuff relatively cheaply while I figure out just what I want to move on to next? So I'll go first on this. If you're looking to figure out what you want to play, I would get with a friend and try everything you're thinking about on Cockatrice with them, because it's free to do. You get to play the decks, and then you can play them before you invest. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, as far as actually mitigating costs, I don't think, you know, we have any secret there. I mean, just be patient, right? I mean, the best thing you can do in terms of keeping costs down is just... Yeah. Not jumping into cards at their highest point. That's basically it.
Yeah, like if you haven't ordered from Oasis yet, I highly recommend using the CCMTG code. It's 15% off. It's going to get you better prices than anywhere else. So check out Oasis Games with that code, and it should really help you out there. As far as to Michael's point, so part of I don't know that I've ever said this on the podcast, and it should probably be said. Oasis Games actually sponsors the podcast hosts with Magic cards. So we don't actually pay for Magic cards for events. We actually just take them out of Oasis Games inventory and go to the event with the cards. So we don't actually need to own Magic cards. So if you asked me the price of a Magic card today, I couldn't tell you. Michael might be able to because he works at Oasis.
I can tell you some of them, it's not like a major cause for concern in either of our lives.
Yeah. How many Magic cards do you think you have in your house right now, Michael?
30?
None? 30? Yeah. Like, we just...
They're mostly basic
them.
Lands, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I have a basic land box. I have my last sealed deck, and I have a couple standard decks to play on Wednesdays. And that's it. I don't collect, and that's actually one of the reasons that we don't usually talk about things like investments and stuff like that on this podcast, because Michael and I have no idea. You know, it's one of the best benefits that Oasis gives us, and we really appreciate them for it. So sorry that we're not good at answering these kind of questions. Nicholas asks, what is the process for becoming and maintaining silver status? How many events and what kind of events and finishes do you need? And what improvements have you seen and acted on that get you beyond silver status? Well, as somebody who's never achieved silver, I will just let Michael answer this question.
I mean, I would say mostly you are going to have to attend a fair number of Grand Prix, and you're probably going to need to qualify for some Pro Tours and do this kind of all sequentially. So,
I don't think I've ever seen somebody hit silver. That's not true. I've seen one person hit silver without qualifying for one Pro Tour. But it's literally... Is it even possible anymore?
It wasn't possible under the old system.
Okay, so it is possible now. So you get all threes?
Well, now you get more events. So this the answer to this question is going to change going forward, because you're going to have to work harder to keep your events balanced in terms of not losing quarters that are too valuable to you. I don't know if this makes sense, but basically under the new system, you have 12 total events rather than any number of Pro Tours or Worlds and 6 Grand Prix. So under this new system, you have 12 total events, with the rule being that only a maximum of 3 can be in any quarter, with a quarter being defined as the time between the last Pro Tour and the time of the next Pro Tour. So the Pro Tour is the last event of the quarter. So the main thing that I would say right now is my, like, I'm not going to play any other Grand Prix before this Pro Tour in about a month, because I would have to X3 for a single point.
Yeah.
So, and that's because I know that I'm guaranteed at least 3 at this Pro Tour as well. So I need at least an X3 to replace an X4 finish in Memphis. So it's a little bit interesting, and a lot of it is, at this point, just trying to sort of budget and time your travel well and hit the right events. In terms of looking at what finishes you realistically need, you probably need mostly 11-4s, plus just playing every Pro Tour will basically get you silver. That would get you 12 plus 8, so that would put you at 20, which I guess is a little bit... No, it would put you at... No, it would put you at 28. 12 plus 16. So that would get you there under this current system, but you will probably have some events that are better than that, some events that are worse than that, and the main thing, I think, then, is just being a little bit flexible, like sometimes traveling to one more event than you planned, or if you don't need events, maybe just saving some money and not going. Realistically, I probably, like, just getting into kind of the nitty-gritty of my finishes, I have missed, just so you can get some sort of idea, I've missed one day two in about 2 years of playing Grand Prix now. I probably cash a little over half of them, if I had to guess. I wouldn't say it's, like, easy to get silver, but if you have any great finishes, like really big-time finishes, if you have good finishes at a Pro Tour or good finishes at a Grand Prix, finish is a launching board. And especially with the way the system is set up now, just keep playing events and hope the one goes well for you. That's really all I can say.
So this one is one we said that we would cover a little bit in depth on this one. It's... Brian asks, I asked this on hashtag at the beginning, but I would love to understand, what is it that makes the hosts of this show are always qualified for the RPDQ? I know Michael is silver, but before that he was still always qualified, and it seems like Spencer never plays Magic, but because of breaks, and is still always qualified. Is there something that you do that others don't? Do you do the same thing? Do you take different approaches? Well, currently we take different approaches because Michael Silver. I don't know. I mean, when Michael and was playing PPDQs, it was, I think we talked a lot more. Like, that was something that I was in constant communication with Michael. I feel like we had very similar processes. It was either play the best deck or attack the meta in the way we think we need to attack it. But also, towards the end of it, we realized that the PPDQ meta is, like, not a real thing. And, like, there's going to be some grinders that are going to play one of three decks that you have to know, and that's, like, a local to you. Honestly, Michael and I did a really good job of kind of answering this a little bit last week, in that once you are good enough to win PPDQs consistently, you probably don't have to play that many of them. And a lot of my breaks have come from winning early PPDQs.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time you're not taking breaks when you're not qualified yet. It's pretty much always your breaks happily coincide with winning a PPDQ and then being like, well...
Right.
I don't really have a lot of Magic to play for the next month, so...
Okay. Yeah, it's actually one of the downfalls of PPDQ, so while it does appear like I'm on a lot of Magic breaks, it's actually because I'm already qualified.
make sure that so you're like, sort of in a weird forced magic break.
Yeah. So I can either fork out money to go to a Grand Prix that weekend, or I can just play an MTGO event or two. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Honestly, I think that the real secret to winning PBTQs is realizing that most people now are going to have good decks, so you can't, like, get free wins anymore off of that. And just be honest about your losses. Like, it's so easy to, like, feel like you got unlucky or you deserve to win that match because you're, like, a great player in your local meta. But, like, nobody deserves to win a match of Magic. And that's the people that I see constantly top eighting and not finishing are usually people that don't have a realistic expectation of, like, they need to play well the entire time and they're not entitled to anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think to some extent, like, this is true with a lot of things, but sometimes it's hardest to win the first one, and once you kind of win one, the lid comes off a little bit. Like, sometimes it's just hard to win an event when you've never won one before, just like it's hard to day two a Grand Prix until you day two one,
and then the pressure's off,
and then it's just happening for you. I don't know. I mean, I think ultimately, just understand why you're building the deck the way you are. Understand why you're, you know, making the plays you are. And I think if you just try to be cerebral about Magic in general, you have a really good chance to be successful.
Yeah, you and I have both said on the podcast that oftentimes having a reason is, and it being the wrong reason, is better than not having a reason.
Right. You can't improve if you don't have if you don't even know why you're doing something.
Right.
There's nothing to improve because you're not even at the level where you're thinking about it.
Yeah. Adrian's question actually kind of coincides with this one a little bit. He says, how do you learn and gather data when you aren't playing as often as you would like? For somebody who doesn't get to play as often as they would like, I can't tell you the number of times where I'm... And now that I have this awesome iPhone 8, this podcast is brought to you by Apple. I'm sure the Android user's going to laugh at me. But, like, I'm just in the shower, taking a shower, like, letting the water fall on me, Michael. And I'm just on Goldfish all the time now. It's like... I'm looking at decks. I'm consuming everything that I can. I listen to tons of Magical articles every week. I listen to podcasts. The thing is like, so many of our listeners, Adrian, including you, I know this about you, are already doing the things that you need to do. You're already doing it. I know that, like, you want to gain more of that edge, but there's only so many podcasts, so many articles, so many deck lists that you can look at. Like, there's a reason that there's no substitute for playing.
Yeah.
It's because... Oh, go ahead.
The other thing I would say is, beyond that, try to find the best players in your community and make connections with them. Like,
yeah.
A better... Even a better resource than articles and podcasts is just having people to test with if you want to test, having people to bounce ideas off of. I mean, I would say, like, a lot of days... Like... Matt and I will send each other, like, 5+ deck lists. Like, even ones we haven't played, or, like, he'll send me a picture of his draft, or just, like, just kind of having sounding boards for stuff is really beneficial. And having to, like, why, if someone asks you, why are you playing this, or, you know, why do you like this, what do you think this is good against, like, just... It's kind of back to why are you making your plays, right? Like, if we're having to justify everything we do, and we're having to explain why we think this play is better than this play, or this card is better than this card, or why I want a sideboard like this, like, you eliminate a lot of the traps and mistakes because you've already, like, played through them in your head before you're even playing the games.
Yeah. I think that, I think that the truth is that we all want the information that Adrian's trying to get, right? We all want that thing that substitutes for the time that we can't be playing Magic. And the truth is that there's not a real substitute for that. I can't... First of all, Michael's a much better Magic player than I am. I knew that very early in knowing Michael. I was literally... The weekend of me going to the Pro Tour, having a conversation with Quentin about this kid, Michael Hinderocker, who was just starting to play PPTQs on how he was the best player in Utah. So don't get me wrong, Michael is significantly better at Magic than I am. But one of the biggest differences between me and Michael is Michael plays Magic a lot more than I do. And because of that, he gets to hone his skills a lot more than I do. So I hope that what you actually take out of this, Adrian, is there's not really a substitute. You're already doing the things that you're going to need to do. And you should, if you want to take the step that Michael's taking, you need to just play more Magic. Like, I think it would be disingenuous of us not to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, even beyond just actually playing games, it's just, like, how much of your brain power are you expending towards this, right? I mean, if you want to get better at anything, that's probably just the reality of it.
Yeah. I'm sure you've already listened to this, but I think that the game did a really good episode on, I don't know what it was called, but it was kind of like, I think it was called Greatness at Any Cost. And I think that, you know, the obsessive nature that we need to put into Magic to get great at it is really
important. Yeah, I vaguely remember reading something by Matt Sperling where, you know, he more or less says it's almost impossible to regularly qualify for Pro Tours playing a healthy amount of Magic. And I mostly agree with that. Right.
That's so true.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that that's the reality of it.
You know, it's so fun. Like, I haven't qualified for a second Pro Tour, and I certainly haven't played very much Magic since my first one.
I mean,
compared to my friends who have gone to the Pro Tour, right? So that very much hit home for me, Michael.
The people you're playing against, you have to compete against people who are just more degenerate than you are, basically.
Exactly. Like, I'm playing against somebody who probably played 20 more hours of Magic than me in the last week. Like, who do you think is favored in that matchup?
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. Justin asks, what factors do you consider when choosing decks for larger events, mainly GPs? Stuff like how good is it, how hard is it to play, and how well you know it are probably good. I just want to know what the host thinks. So first of all, so I do care about how hard a deck is, but that's because I don't have time. If that should not be an excuse, though. If you should be able to play any deck at a GP well enough to do well with it. I firmly believe that. It is a crutch that I use way too often. It's something that I could definitely improve on in Magic. Because the truth is it doesn't actually take that many games for you to understand a deck. And, you know, I just think that one is one that I would steer away from. I think that's a crutch people use, including myself.
I agree with that. I don't really... I've had very good luck choosing decks for large events, for the most part, like Grand Prix level especially. I feel like probably my best ability as a player is deck evaluation and selection. But I wouldn't think at all about how hard it is to play or how well you know it. I think if you're serious about doing well at Grand Prix level size events, those can't be considerations, and they have to be considerations that... I think realistically, if those are like fears you're having going into a Grand Prix, you need to work to become better, so you're just more comfortable.
Yeah, I think that the truth is, if we look at both how well do you know it, and how hard it is to play, you can fix both of those things. How good the deck is the only one that you're not actually in control over, right?
Well,
you're in control over it in the fact that you picked the deck,
right.
And like the composition of your 75, but like I can't make mono black control a deck, for example.
But
right?
Basically B and C are always going to be hundreds. I always think I can play a deck at a pretty high level, and I always feel like by the time I get to a Grand Prix, I usually have like written sideboard notes.
That's
just
be honest,
time.
Michael.
That's
three,
just time.
Three leagues with a deck. Three MTGO leagues with the deck. You probably have a pretty good understanding of your deck.
And if you don't, there are resources that exist for basically every deck to help you learn faster and learn better.
So I would say, in picking your deck, I would honestly set aside time. I just messaged my team this week for some FaceTime playtesting. So actually playtesting together. I have two other teammates in Utah that I want to get playtesting in before the Grand Prix to kind of, like, narrow in on some stuff. And then I'm just going to get the two decks that I want in MTGO and jam, right? And that's it. That's all I'm going to be doing. And if I – unless, you know, Michael is, like, text me two days before the GP and just says, Spencer, this deck is broken. I'm going to trust him then, and I'm going to play whatever deck he says and then get that from him, right? He's talking about those resources outside of there. But it doesn't take as many. People want to play like 100, 300 matches with the deck before Grand Prix. You don't have to do that. And if you think when you're picking a deck, you should trust the people that you trust. You trust them for a reason. That's number one. Trust yourself. If you think the deck is good, if you're winning with the deck, you gotta put some stock in yourself. Like, you're the one playing this Grand Prix. And then just ignore the other stuff that we talked about. And I think that you'll...
Yeah, okay, so my thought is this, right? Like, it is better to play... So if I think Ironworks is broken and Jund is kind of bad, but I have a lot of matches with Jund, if I've played that many matches with a deck and I still think it's, like, maybe not a good choice, I know very much all my matchups. I know everything about it. I have no room for improvement. What I want to do in that kind of spot is see if I can get another deck to a spot where I like it better. Right? Like, me having played a lot of matches with Jund, or whatever deck that may be for you, makes it a deck that's a fine choice if you can't find anything you like.
Yes.
But if you can find something you like for what you anticipate the metagame being, it seems insane to me to say, I don't think I've played enough games with this, so I'm going to play something worse. It would be like saying, well... Sometimes I had good success drafting green-white, so, you know I opened a Teferi, but I don't play blue-white in draft. Right? It's like, sometimes it's a little bit harder to figure things out on the fly, but passing up something you know is good so you can play what you're more familiar with is insane.
Yeah, I agree. Henry asks how to ask good questions. I kind of laughed at this because I didn't actually realize that he was serious when he posted it. I was like, hey, we're still looking for questions for the Q&A. He's like, how to ask good questions. And I was like, haha. And he's like, oh, that was ironic, but I'm actually serious. And I actually think this is a really good question.
Is that question inception?
So at first I was giggling, and then he told me, like, no, I'm actually serious. Like, how do you ask good questions in Magic? I'm like, oh. That's a really good question. And I think that we actually kind of covered the baseline for this earlier in that having that reason, right? And I think that if you don't have a reason, the first thing that you should be doing is asking yourself and then asking others around you, right? Like, you watch something and you can't understand their reason for doing it, ask that player why they did it. Decide whether that reason makes sense, right? Look at a deck list. Oh, why did you pick this card over this card? And have the thing that you... Don't ask, why did you pick this card with no context, because then it doesn't matter what my answer is. But if you ask the question in the context of, oh, I was thinking this, what's your reason for this over this, or vice versa, that's actually a really good conversation starter and something that you can learn from. So always having it prefaced in, like, what is my goal in the question that I'm asking is actually a great way to get the information you're looking for.
I agree with that, and focusing your questions on the places where you have differences of opinion. Right. If someone you respect or trust is telling you something different than what you believe, like, it's important to figure out where that comes from, because, you know, obviously if you trust them on most things, like, you want to figure out why you don't agree on this. And you don't always have to, you know, you don't always have to agree on everything, but I think that those conversations, just being respectful but also like being able to have conversations where you can both even be heated, but without it being personal, is what the place you're trying to get to, right? If you can ask questions that are difficult and challenging, and just sort of leave the questions just as questions at the end of it, that's the goal.
Yeah. So that's it for our Q&A today. Thank you so much for our listeners for asking these awesome questions. Thank you, Michael, for spending the time to answer them with me today. Don't forget, you can check us out on patreon.com/ccmtg. Our next goal... Oh, I don't actually know.
I don't either.
Our next goal on Patreon... Oh, no, I'm not even logged in. This is so awkward. This is the most awkward. Mason says it's get Michael a Corvette.
It sounds unlikely.
I feel like that's...
Based on
feel like that's
my memory of the goals.
Well, there is one to get you a robot dinosaur, so, you know, a Corvette's not that far off. The next one is a Pro Tour exclusive episode. So, basically, we would do a Pro Tour exclusive episode for the patrons. We're at $5,401. It's just at $500 per month. So, we're actually not that far off. So, yeah, patreon.com/ccmtg to help us out to get there. You can find me on Twitter at SpencerH. You can find Michael at Spencer... No, you can't. You can find Michael at MagicMikeMTG. You can find me on MTGO at Spencer13Dev. You can find the podcast at CCMTG and on the Mana Base, ConstructorCriticism.com, YouTube, and MTGCast.com. Did I already say that one?
I don't think so.
I don't even know. All right. You can join the conversation by joining our Facebook group or Discord. I already told you how to join the clan. These show notes need to be changed. You can tweet us with the hashtag WithTheBeGood. Hashtag WithTheBeGood is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. And our first tweet comes from Kyle, who says, "White Black Vehicles is my spirit animal, and the best cards are in my favorite colors. Hashtag MTG Dom. Hashtag WithTheBeGood." This is actually going to be our deck of the week this week, but we didn't have time for it. I think this deck is really powerful, Michael.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just like, you just play a lot of good Magic cards, which is typically a good sign for mid-range decks, in my experience. That's, you know, it doesn't hurt when you, like, look at your deck list and you're like, yeah, I'm mostly fine just casting any of these spells independently of one another.
Yeah. Let's see here. What's next, Mike? We have...
Jared tweets, "Was looking at my pay stub for tomorrow and found out that I got a 2% pay raise. For what? I have no idea, but hey, a raise is a raise."
Dude, I'd love a 2% pay raise.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I think anyone would, always.
Yeah, my work actually does a 3% raise every year for cost of living, and it's super awesome. So that, it could be just a cost of living raise.
It's still kind of amusing to find out about it by looking at a pay stub and just being like, that isn't the number I thought it was going to be. Oh, it's more? Oh,
dude,
that's kind of cool.
Have I ever told you about how I found out I have a 401k?
No.
Okay, so one day my paycheck was just smaller than normal, and I had gotten a raise at the same time. Well, smaller than I thought it would be, not smaller than normal. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I guess I just hit a new tax bracket. One day I was like applying for something, and I needed my pay stub. And on my pay stub it said 401k contribution and a number, and I was like, oh. And then I, like, had to go to HR. I was like, how do I look at this? And then I went and looked at my 401k, and I was like, oh, that's a lot of money that I've been putting in.
Fair enough. It's a good way to find out.
It's like, it's so, and then I, like, told my wife. She's like, I knew your paycheck was smaller than we thought it would be. And I was like, yep, but not changing it because it didn't affect our lives.
Yep.
My work is insane. If I put in 10%, they match at 11. So it's...
That's pretty nice. Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. I knew this program was good for something. Hashtag would be good. And this is Ben tweeting a picture of a lot of rats in
He's
play.
Attacking through a scarab god with rat colonies.
That's I think great. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think this is great. And look at all the rat colonies in his graveyard.
Yeah, it's a lot of them. But that,
oh,
that
that's
scarab
great.
God looks a little slow and mopey. And only a 5/5.
did something uncharacteristic and bought this sweet playmat for the artist to frame on from the artist to frame on my wall. I can't talk. I simply love this piece of art. Hashtag would be good. I have some playmats that I want to get framed. I think that playmats are like a great way to add like an art collection to your home. Personally, I think this is cool.
Yeah, this is sweet. I really like this one. I don't know what the card that is off the top of my head though.
I also don't know. Shh. That awkward moment when you win against your biggest magic idol and leave him feeling pretty salty. Dude, I do that all the time when I beat Austin Geltz.
He's your biggest magic idol?
Oh, easily. He's the Golden Godels.
Fair enough. Can't argue with that. I wouldn't describe Austin as an especially salty guy, but maybe I just lose to him too much.
Dude, I am so excited to record CCMTG with Magic Mike MTG tonight. Last month, my life had been insane, and now I just get to sit back and talk MTG with one of the best players I know. Dude, thank you for doing this show with me. I really have enjoyed the last 2 weeks. The
nice
show has
be
been
done.
A de-stressor. Dude, yeah. It's been a de-stressor in my life.
It feels good. It's nice when something that can sometimes be a source of stress flips and instead is relaxing.
Yeah, it's been really good. So thank you everybody so much for listening. Don't forget to tweet us with hashtag of the good. Check out our Patreon. Subscribe on YouTube. Oh, wait, we got one live. Got this while recording at CCMTG hashtag of the good. There are lessons to be learned by listening to others.
Are you saying you're eating Chinese food, Mason?
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you guys all next week.
See ya.